Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I fell asleep on this one. Okay, today we're going to have a guest on. He's going to be talking about black-owned grocery stores. So while we're waiting on him to call, we're going to do our regular morning ritual here with motivational stuff. So I'm just waiting on my computer here to catch up to me. In any event, we'll talk. We're going to have a black grocery store owner on. He's going to be talking about black grocery stores and the grocery store business. You'll be able to call in and ask him questions at 619-768-2945. Oh, man, what's going on with this laptop? And all I can do is be patient with it. oh, here we go. All right, here we go.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Okay, we got a guest calling in here in a few minutes. Today's topic, black-owned grocery stores. I'm trying to get my board straight here. All right, he'll be on in about 4 or 5 minutes.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking, And Master Ronnie saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Today on It's My House, our live stream, we have a very special guest. And we're going to talk about grocery stores, probably some other things as well. But start off with grocery stores, particularly black-owned grocery stores. So Let's go to our phone lines here to Sterling Moody. Mr. Moody, you there?
Yes, I'm here. I can hear you well. I was enjoying
thank you
the
very... Oh, my morning motivation?
Yeah, I tried to push replay. He was saying some very positive and
well, we record things. All of these. We record all of these podcasts. So I'll send you. Matter of fact, it's the same link I sent you about 15 minutes after the podcast is over. You can play it, you know, back. I'll send you a link, too.
That'd be perfect. Thank you very much. And thanks for having me this morning.
Well, let's start off with give us your background here and what you do.
Okay, I am an entrepreneur. I own a grocery store here in St. Louis, Missouri, the mighty Midwest. I am been in the grocery business for 38 years, so I'm 65 years old. So that's basically all I've done. Worked for a major grocery chain in St. Louis, National Food Store, starting at 14 years old. So what a lot of people don't realize is that probably 80 to 90% of your first job as a working person is food related. I don't know what yours was, but, you know, of course mine was National. People start in the restaurant industry, but it's all food related. As far as grocery stores, we have less black-owned grocery stores in the whole United States than it is states.
You have that ballpark number?
I would say no more than 35 or 40. You can Google it. They say 21, but there's been some branches of stores opening because of this new push for healthy food. But this is very, very minimum when you start talking about the amount of food consumption that the African-American people eat. Now, that doesn't include the Save-A-Lot come up with a program where they're doing franchises for them, but it's still a Save-A-Lot. I'm talking about starting from scratch, black-owned grocery store with your name, your family name, whatever it is, on the building, not, you know, a franchise that's, and no disrespect to the franchise owner, it's still a tough business, but you have that umbrella of Save-A-Lot who kind of nourish you and take care of you when it gets to the crunch time.
Now, that's interesting. You put the, what's that number again, you say?
I say less than 50, but if you do Google it, they come up with like 27.
All right, 27. All right. Now, what's interesting about that number, you have, how many black people we have in the United States? How many millions? I'm trying to look at that number now. Well, we have over 30 million.
Yes.
All right. I would want to say 42 million, but let's put it at, just to simplify this, there are at least 30 million black folk in the United States.
Okay.
And yet there's only, you say, how many grocery stores can for,
Let's say 30.
Okay, let's put it at 30 now.
Easy math.
I'm looking at the odds here. Now, I'm relating this to sports. Now, they say the odds of a United States high school male athlete playing in college is a little bit over 7%. However, it's less than 2% that play Division I sports. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from that, let's say the number of high school basketball players that actually turn pro is anywhere from 0.02 to 0.03%.
Mm.
So it seems like, not seems like, that, and they're over 300. Players in the NBA, 80% of them are black. So it seems like black folks in the grocery business, it seems like it's easier to make the NBA than to have your own grocery store.
Yeah, they say that you have a better chance of getting struck by lightning than being a professional sports player.
Or a grocery store owner. Now, why do you think there's such, man, that's a low number, 41, let's say 30, let's put it at 30. That's a low number, 30, out of 30 million people. So why do you think that is?
Well, there's multiple reasons. I would say first is low margins, and you have to deal with volume. So the struggle to open up one store is so major. To really get into the ball game, you'd have to have multiple stores. Now, here's something very interesting. Walmart, for example, does $36 million an hour in sales.
That's overall?
Yeah, all over the – we're dealing with, you know, the
– In all their departments, in other words, from the clothes they sell, the automotive stuff, the groceries, all that, $36 million an hour.
Yes, and they profit 20,928 a minute. So, volume works. That's $36 billion a year in profit. But they employ 1.6 million people as employees. But my point is, if you have a grocery store and cannot do the duplication of 5 to 7 stores, then you don't do enough volume because the margins are so low that you don't have the support of banking, the support of getting the people acclimated to come into a black-owned grocery store. So all those things has to happen for you to get to the 6-7 store of success.
Well, tell us how. You got started working for a chain, and then you eventually moved to your own store?
Yes.
Okay. Now, how did you make that transition?
Well, the challenges are always there, and number one challenge of small business is not new. It's always cash flow, and it's always cash needed to survive. So we have, you know, one thing that happened in the first term of President Obama's term, he came up with something called food desert. Food desert financing. And it was designed for all the areas where the big guys with the 2016-18 stores pulled out and left no grocery store for the people to buy healthy food and people to shop. So there are some towns, and I'm sure people on your listeners can contest to this, that they're driving 30 to 40 miles just to go buy fresh produce, just to go and get groceries, because the big guys pull out. It's a tough customer, but it's a good customer, because you have to remember now, we came up with the three meals a day, which the first meal is meat. There's the sausage, there's the bacon, whatever you meat for breakfast. Then you got lunch, you got your hamburger, your hot dog, whatever. Then your dinner, your mom said we having pork chops, we having chicken. It's always designed around meat. And because meat is the most profitable item in the grocery store at 30 to 40%, that customer is more important than the customer eating healthy.
Let me ask you this. There are, particularly in a lot of black, hardcore black neighborhoods.
Yes.
And or small grocery stores that sell food. It could be owned by Koreans, Vietnamese, someplace like Detroit, Arabs. Why do you think that is? That a lot of these, matter of fact, with the George Floyd case, that store is third generation owned. It's a convenience store owned by third generation immigrants. We did a story about 30 years ago. There was a young girl, 15 years old, Latasha Harlins, who was killed in a liquor slash convenience store in Los Angeles, owned by Koreans. And these people have traveled thousands of miles to the United States to take advantage of these black opportunities in black neighborhoods. Eric Gardner, who was allegedly selling cigarettes illegally in New York City, same thing. The convenience stores were immigrant-owned. Mike Brown, near you in Ferguson, Missouri.
Yeah,
right. So now, what? Why are and these people travel thousands of miles to come into various cities in the United States, particularly in hardcore black neighborhoods. But the people that live within 1 square mile, with the exception of yourself, let's say there's only 30 of you in the United States, where's the disconnect here with black folks?
Well, I think that the disconnect is, first, the starting dollars needed to put together a grocery store. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's not like a tire shop or a barber shop. You have to have groceries. You have to have items that the customers want. And the reason why I believe that the Middle East can come to the black community, again, is the old talk about the reckless dollar that the black person have. You spend. You spend money, you see it, you want it, you get it, and that's what makes them successful.
Let's say, what's a ballpark figure in your neck of the woods to open up a modest-sized family-run convenience store?
Okay, I would say it's two different things. I have a full-service grocery store.
Hey, matter of fact, give us the distinction between those two. What's the distinction between full-service and convenience?
A grocery store is a grocery store just like a Cubs or any of the store that carry produce, fresh produce every day, fresh meat cut
mm-hmm.
every day, grocery sale, a deli, you know, the whole nine yards of what a grocery store consists of. A convenience
right.
store would be more on the line of liquor, snacks, junk food, cook your food, take your food stamps kind of situation. So that would be the corner convenience store. Most of the people now, with the stimulus and the extra money on their food stamp card, are just spending not for healthy food. And that's what a grocery store does. The second thing that I don't know if a lot of listeners know, that the food stamp SNAP program is under the Department of Agriculture. That was not designed for poor people just to go eat food. It was designed years ago, was put together because the farmers was complaining about they just wasn't selling enough food to the wholesalers, so the Department of Agriculture came up with the SNAP program to give food stamps to people to now to buy more products so the farmers would turn more. It was a rescue for the farmers. Now it's just, it kind of went the other way, with the food stamp. And secondly, is there's a lot of black farmers could just, you know, would love to unite with a group to just buy black, sell it to the black-owned grocery stores, and everybody get circle of connection together. So it's a major void. It's a major void with a disconnect of that. The other thing is during the pandemic, just think about how many churches, how many organizations gave food. Food has always been the constant thing that healed people and helped people get over something. But how many
mm-hmm.
African-American owned wholesalers or grocery stores benefit from $300,000 to $400,000 a month of food that was given away? If you know, that's a whole another conversation. So it's a tough industry, but, you know, somewhere, somehow, we have to grab hold to it like we've done a lot of things, sports, you know, and different things that we're excelled in to make it a financial good position for a grocery chain.
Now, how much capital do you think would be needed to open up a full-service grocery store?
Well, the two things other than cash would be credit.
Okay.
You know, vendors love a new opportunity to ship you product, but credit with terms would be very, very important. To open up, let's say, 15,000 square foot grocery store with all departments in it, I would say about $1.2 million. That's equivalent.
Okay, now isn't that something that a handful of churches can probably pony up together?
Oh yeah, and then it could grow.
But I don't know of any black churches that own any grocery stores.
No. But there's wholesalers out there just, you know, working real hard to try to figure out how can they serve an underserved community. There's a lot of buildings, and everyone listening knows that there's grocery stores that's closed in your community. There's buildings that could be converted to grocery stores, but you just have to synchronize our watches and figure out how to do it. That's just what I've been trying to teach up here in the St. Louis area.
Now, with matter of fact, in the St. Louis metro area, now, are there any other black-owned full-service grocery stores like yours?
No. There's a couple franchise Save-A-Lot. Those guys are doing well. But just straight entrepreneur, raw, start-from-scratch grocery stores, no.
Okay. Now, obviously you've got a customer base. What makes you, I guess, what do they call it, unique selling proposition? What do you offer there whereas a person might not want to go to Whole Foods?
Okay, great question. Here's one thing that we would offer, just like employment. We look like ourselves when we hire each other. That's what's unique. And when you get a little uniqueness in there as far as understanding the single mom working for you part-time, just trying to get a babysitter running late. So, you know, it's just blackness, if I could put it like that.
Okay.
You understand your employees better. Secondly, you have to realize that there's a lot of entrepreneurs that's in the starting gate on just product to get into a grocery store, because you can make the best tea in the world, but it's only your family saying it's good. You just got some good family tea. But if you can get it in a store and then all of a sudden takes off, then you have your black-owned Lipton tea or something, you know. So that's what we offer also. We have over 20 entrepreneur products in our store that we don't charge them. Just come on in, and we have like 3 to 5 people that have just jumped into now the major markets in here because we would let them get the start with us.
Oh, man, that's an excellent opportunity. Now, share with us, I think you mentioned this the other day when we were speaking. If a person wants to get something on a product, their shelf at the average grocery store, well, I mean, what's all entail as far as cost? In other words, getting shelf space.
Well, here's what they do. The warehouses charge you a slotting allowance, what they call, to even put it in our warehouse to ship it to our stores, $7,500. And if you have different flavors, it's $2,500 a piece. So you're about $15,000 down. Then they take your shipment.
Now, the $7,500, is that the fee, or does that mean $7,500 worth of product?
No, $7,500 just to see if we can do anything with it.
Oh, okay.
Then you have
all right.
A 90-day period to have moved so many cases, or they just tell you to take it, it didn't work. So now you're down the shipping cost to them, the preparation costs you have to get the amount that they want you to get to them, and the allowance to get started. So it cripples you going in.
Now,
you know?
What about advertising? Do they have to spend money on advertising on top of that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You're going to have to advertise with them your own product. So it's just a challenge, you know, to get it off the ground. But we have about seven that started with us is now doing well in, like, three of the chains here in St. Louis.
Okay, that's excellent. Now, how do you go about deciding what product that you want to take a chance on to put on your shelf?
Well, that's where your supplier comes in, and you come in and they run a survey of your customer base, and
mm-hmm.
then they have, you know, data in the warehouse and in their main office to tell you these are the items that sell in your area. Well, also your customers dictate, hey, you don't have this, can you get this? So once you open, it opens the door of a lot of opportunities. And basic groceries is basic groceries, you know. It's the thing that's different now, you have to remember, say 25 years ago, you would never go in a gas station and think you can buy some Miracle Whip.
You can do that now.
you can go everywhere and buy groceries now. You can buy the General Dollar, the Family Dollar, the Dollar World, the Walgreens. They took the liquor out up here in the Midwest out of their stores and put in a full line of groceries. So, you know, it's very challenging now, and that would be another reason why it's a little challenge to start up a grocery store, because you have way more competition just selling the product than you used to have. It used to be grocery store, don't go in a gas station and try to get chicken or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. But you said now, the convenience stores and the gas stations, a lot of their inventory that's food related.
Oh, yeah. Yep. But when you have your eye on...
Some have a frozen food section, which
frozen.
I don't trust frozen food coming out of a 7-Eleven or convenience store or gas station, because two times that I've gotten something out of the frozen food section, first time was out of a 7-Eleven when I was in college, I got food poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
And the second time was at a gas station... frozen food, yeah, something like wings.
Yeah.
I got food poisoning behind that too. So I don't eat anything frozen food from a convenience store, no 7-Eleven, nothing.
Well, one thing about frozen food products, you can hide dates, and you don't know how long it's really been frozen.
Never thought about that because I didn't look.
Yeah, and refrigeration problems happen, and refrigeration go down, and you're not aware it went down, and you stick it back in there, it's frozen again, so you don't know how long.
I never thought about that. Well, my solution is don't buy any frozen food products out of a department, not a department store, a gas station or a convenience store.
Well, I want to share one thing before we hang up with you, if it's okay with you and your listeners.
Sure.
The other problem, and this is something that I've just, in the last 60 days, have witnessed, any emergency that you have without proper cash flow, I don't care what your business is, small, medium, or large, it can sink a little guy much faster than it can a guy with reserves. We just had an incident with our utility company. They had a transformer that blew up on our side of town. Locked the grocery store down for 6 hours. We had to throw everything away. And we're in a fight now. We had to close the store for 8 days. We opened back up, sent in our claim, which they told us we had. But the third-party investigator said the transformer was underground, so therefore there's no negligence, and they denied the claim. So those are kind of things that cripple you, and there you go, digging again, trying to get back to neutral, where it's just tough. It's tough in business, period. So I know that the people listen, I say, he's just having a tough time. It's tough in business right now. But there's a lot of things could be different if we had more black-owned grocery stores in the area. Just check every city and count on your fingers how many do you have that you can say, you know what, we shopping grocery black today, and you can't hardly pull up in the parking lot of many.
Now, do you just have one location or what?
Yes, that's my goal is five.
Okay.
You know, of course, with some investment and some help, we can achieve it. But, you know, there's the biggest chain here on 64 stores. So what you do, you can have a bad one, a struggling one, but 63 of them pulls that one up. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then
if you got 63 under your belt, I mean, you're bulk ordering.
Yes.
So you can get a lower price on everything you buy.
Absolutely. just say beverage companies, without naming them, you're in like three different categories, and your pricing determines your volume determines your pricing.
Now, your plan to expand. If you can reveal it, I mean, does that include partnerships with people interested in getting the business or franchising what you
Absolutely.
Already have or what? Okay.
Yes, I have talked to people in Oklahoma. I've talked to a very good friend of mine doing a major project in Minnesota that he's doing healthy growing fish. And they want to tie it into a grocery store combination where they can grow the fish, sell the fish in the grocery store, and the produce they grow. So I've been talking to, like, several people who definitely want to tap the water of the grocery store industry. And I'm open. I'm open for wherever you are to talk about it.
Okay. Because, yeah, there's a lot of food deserts out there.
Yes, sir. Great term for it also, because if you start thinking about it, man, I have to take my Saturday and I have to get in a car and drive 45 minutes to go and just do the simple duty as grocery shop.
Right. Yeah, there's, I know plenty of towns that they go grocery shop and they got to drive 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes away to go grocery shopping. So I guess those towns would be classified as a food desert.
Yeah.
Now, what about restaurants that? Now, when you say full size grocery store, now that's a retail operation, I'm assuming.
Yes. Yeah. We have. Okay. Yes, that's a retail operation.
All right. So somebody that owns a restaurant would probably go to another establishment.
To buy?
I'm guessing. I don't know.
No, we have, we have a lot of restaurants, local entrepreneurs that have hamburger shops, chicken, whatever, and buy from the store. But, you know, you have the big conglomerate Sam's and Costco's and those guys where they can go and buy it cheaper there than they can buy it from me.
Right. Well, you already got one off the ground, so it's just a matter of now, how would, because like I say, only 30 in the country, so let's say, are there career days where, because a lot of kids might be interested in going to the food business, the grocery business, but they've never been exposed to it.
Yes, sir.
Other than going in and being a consumer, they haven't looked at the, they've never been exposed to the business side. So any suggestions on how you can get young people interested in becoming grocers?
Yes, that's a good question. Here's one thing is that there are, when I was with the chain, I was with 64 stores, and two of us black guys were managers out of 64 stores. Well, it's not a college degree position. It's a work hard, learn the business, and now I can be a manager. And that's mostly, I would say, over 60% of the management people in the grocery industry started, stayed with it, and moved on up and became managers. But can you imagine a teaching opportunity. If there's a black-owned grocery store, I have people in my store now that could go run a store at one of the major chains and with the proper financing and help could start theirs, you know, and just that's the learning curve we have to get to. Just like shopping, the average African-American consumer doesn't even pick up a coupon to go in a store and save the coupon dollars offered because we, again, just shopping. So there's a lot of educational things that can happen and make someone aware of how much money can be made. And because first thing an investor would look at it, oh, grocery stores are low margin. Yes, they are, but lots of volume and low margin equals lots of profit.
Right. All right. Well, going back to these convenience stores or small-scale grocery operations that, you know, these Asians have in black communities, like you say, there's low margins, but they keep the family sustainable.
Yes, absolutely.
So why is it, in your opinion, we don't see the opportunity, black folk don't see the opportunity, because food is basically basic. Now, everybody's got to eat. But for some reason, on a critical mass basis, we don't, I mean, like I say, a handful of churches on a block can get together and at least put together a small operation for a food store.
Oh, yeah.
But why do you think we just don't see it close, and we're close at hand, yet somebody who lives thousands of miles away, they can see it and they come in and take advantage of those opportunities?
I wish I could answer that. I can't really give you an answer that I think would justify why. But I think that it's another one of those things where somebody just pick up the horn and say, you know what, let's get us some grocery stores. And then all of a sudden, it'll be like the NBA or it'll be like the baseball. It'll be like sports, just like, let's go ahead and do this thing. And then we will benefit as a people.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're out there doing what you do, because like you stated, if the number's 30, and it's 50 states, where God knows how many number of cities per state, thousands of them, yet, and with 30-plus million black people, only about 30 stores, probably less. Well, I look at it this way. Let's use competition. So it seems like there's no competition to get in the game as long as you know how to raise and manage capital.
There you are. That's the whole key. And the other part of it is that I'll give you an example. Whatever we get into as African Americans, we excel. We excel because we fight the odds and we know that no one's going to really help. And then you're talking about banking. It's so tough to get finances no matter what level of business you're trying to start. So the creative finance, they know the grocery store works, but there's enough negative on it that the banks just withdraw from helping you get started. But there's the suppliers that are out there that's encouraging it because they understand that it'll be another phase that black people will learn and excel in it. So this is my Michael Jordan. You know, this is what I do and this is what I like. And we get more people interested in learning and understanding it, then all of a sudden there'll be stores on every corner, wherever the stores are now, they can be black owned successfully.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah, it's because it seems like it's a wide open opportunity. What about government regulation? Is it a highly regulated industry or what?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not.
That's good. Well, that makes it even better. Well, I guess the best way to learn is to get hired by a grocery store first, or a convenience store at least. And,
oh, yeah.
And learn the ropes.
Remember that I said Walmart had 1.6 million employees. And 1.6 million employees learn. There's got to be somebody that learned it well enough to be taught how to do it and run it on.
Hmm. What's the most profitable area, if there is such a thing, in a full-size grocery store?
Meat, absolutely. And all, hands down, the meat department is the most popular, not popular, most profitable area.
You know, people like their steaks, pork chops, lamb, chicken. Now, the profession of a butcher, because you don't run into a whole lot of butcher shops these days.
They've made packing houses now. The meat comes in. You can. You don't have to be the guy that can pick up a whole half or cow, throw it on the table, slice out everything out of it. It's easy as I don't know what. You know, the skills that you used to have, they're not even needed now.
Okay, what about seafood?
Seafood is growing, great margin in the grocery industry because of people are getting away from eating meat and they're eating healthier.
Okay. And now, you have suppliers that supply the canned foods, vegetables, produce, and all that?
Everything, yeah. Full service supplier.
Okay. All right. Let's see, we got a caller here. 314, your mic is open.
Good morning, L.A. and
good
Sterling,
morning.
How are you? I'm doing pretty good. Sterling,
I'm here, yes.
One thing that you could tell the listeners is that there's a lot of criteria that goes into the feasibility of any location. Some people are under the impression that you can just drive down the street, find an empty building, and put a grocery store in. Because I know you told me about the time that you was contemplating on doing a study, a survey in Cairo, Illinois, because of his present food desert. So explain to them that process, that it's not like a flip of a coin.
No, that's a good question. What happens is your supplier, and I think I said that in the beginning, I thought I did, your supplier do a survey and a feasibility study on the viability of the customer base that the grocery store is located. And they'll tell you the amount of miles around the area where you're going to put the store and the success forecasted for the store.
Yeah, including the demographics and.
And then the different product mix and the whole. Yeah, something that you pay about $3,500, I think, and you get a detailed survey and study showing like this is a gold mine. You just have to open. This won't work.
In the present competition that you had, you may mention that you was looking at turning a location not too far from you. And one of the present grocery store owners came up and questioned you and said, what are you doing in my territory?
Yeah, I had a lot of that. So I had one of the major company owners said, man, you can get into a couple other things. We help you just get out of the grocery business.
Man.
People don't understand the dynamics. There is great possibilities, but it takes a lot of work to change your suppliers, your produce suppliers, and you're talking about fish, your fish suppliers, and it takes many different black concerns to put those things in place in order for it to work the way it should work. But it seemed like that desire and that ambition to take it to that level just doesn't exist right now.
Yeah.
Now, I know you. I've known you. You've had some big stores. I know you've had some store that was, what you say, 14. Those stores were much bigger than that.
Yeah, the one that was 37,000 square feet. The one we're working on is 22,000. The one we're in now is 8,000.
Yeah. And I remember you told a story. I heard L.A. talk about the churches.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you were trying to do a deal with a popular church here in the area, San Francisco Temple, and you had a meeting set up. Tell L.A. exactly how that went.
Well, I don't want to call them names. I don't want to do that. But it, when you don't understand, I can say this, when you don't understand the concept or where we're going or what you want to do, it's harder to get people motivated because they don't know where it's going. That's what I guess that would be a better way to put it. So it's kind of discouraging when you hear people say, hey, well, why do you think people are going to shop there and not shop where they're shopping now? You know, and those kind of questions. It's just scary to someone to understand. If you asking that question and you lead the people to shop there, then we won't have the problem why they're not shopping there. And that's what my answer was. Also, it's like a barbershop. There's probably six barbershops near everybody's house, but you always go to your barbershop. Your barber move across town. You pass everybody up going to your barber. So you have to make the grocery store and take black-owned off of it. Just say, that's my grocery store, and that's where I'm going to shop. And there is no problem with sales when people take that attitude. And I used to try to get the churches to get involved because what happened is a church own a grocery store, partnership, or in some kind of co-op with the grocery store, there's no reason for that pastor to be shopping at another store when he has his trying to lead by example, saying, guys, this is our store. We got to go support it. So that's why I thought the church would be the best link and the best hook to get people involved wanting to have multiple stores.
Thank you. Do you have a hot bar or a salad bar in your store?
No, with COVID you can't have that kind
of
stuff.
Oh, okay. Forget about COVID. Well, matter of fact, now, speaking of COVID, are people, because I know with me, I got an app on my phone where probably once a month or once every other month, I'll have groceries delivered to the house. Now, are you set up like that yet?
No, we're not delivering. We're not delivering. I've never wanted to deliver groceries, to be honest with you, anyway. Because one thing about a grocery store, the things that you want is usually in the same place. I mean, things that you need on your grocery list, and again, African American people, 90% of them go to the grocery store without a list. You just shop. And then you just buy stuff that you see that you want, not so much that what you need. So you lose that impulse shopping when you deliver. That was my always philosophy. You do better with sales and a customer if you can get them to shop in the store.
And that's true. A lot of people do impulse shopping or point of purchase shopping.
Oh, yeah. You get on the tech lane. Why do you think they put candy bars while you waiting to check out?
Yeah, I'm a sucker for buying a Reese cup. Or a bag of Doritos at that counter.
It's something you didn't have on a list. It's something you saw. I want that. Let me grab it.
And you know, Sterling, I remember, and I've been knowing you for a long time. Remember the time you had that exclusive with that flavored water?
Yeah, we have that still now, out of China.
Out of China.
Mm-hmm.
You also had the ability to have exclusive with the, what is that beer? Stella beer, I think. That's that a lot of the Nigerians like to drink.
Yeah, it's so easy that we just took in a bean pie from Chicago and distributed out of Chicago, And he's been in the store like 3 weeks. And now the other chain stores is calling him, where can we get that? And that's how you get around some of that sliding allowance, because when they call you and want it, they don't charge you.
Okay. What about, because you just, private labels. Now, does your store have, like, let's say somebody wanted to buy some Raisin Bran. So there's the brand Post Raisin Bran, and then of course you can have your own private label Raisin Bran, same product,
mm-hmm.
Raisin Bran, but it's just the name of your store on it. You have any private labeling in your store?
No, we don't have private label, but we do have alternative generic brands because that's what the supplier will offer. But
okay.
With a private label program together, man, that's tons of money.
Okay, didn't know that. Now, you mentioned you had a product in from China, or do you have more than one? Matter of fact, now, what's the motivation, I'm speaking out loud here, for taking on a product, food product, from China?
Well, it's a beverage. It's a flavored water. I have a relationship mm-hmm. with a good friend of mine in California who's a Chinese gentleman. His family runs a plant over there. We brought it in and went to an Atlanta food show with it. And he's selling so much of it now, it's unbelievable. We have the exclusive for the Midwest on it. Great item, good price point. And he gets it from China, sent it from China to California. And then the truck brings it to us.
Okay. Well, we must get it. I guess he's got it at a low price where there's enough margin in there for you to make a profit.
Very, very good margin.
Right, okay. Well, I imagine you've got, how many people come to you on a monthly basis wanting to give you a sales pitch so they can possibly get their product on one of your shelves?
Probably 3 to 5.
Okay. Now, what kind of foot traffic do you have through there on a daily or weekly basis, or at least monthly basis?
You mean customer count?
Yeah, you know, people that walk through the doors and, they're shopping
most,
for
most
groceries.
Most of the areas where we're looking at stores, going to be actually not so many people doing destination shopping like driving. We're right
mm-hmm.
across from a mass transportation facility, so we get a lot of lunch crowd, we get a lot of walking in, coming just for, a few items. So the average grocery store, this will probably blow your mind, the average grocery store customer sale is about $14, and you're doing very well at $14.
Yeah, that adds up.
Yeah, but see, the key is the amount of customers spending. There's always more customers in the fast lane than it
mm-hmm.
is waiting to check out with big groceries.
Now, imagine the first of a month, there's a surge in customers. I mean, people just got their checks or whatever.
Well, it used to be like that, but now they spread out the food stamps and the checks and everything come all month long, so you don't have that mad rush. It used to be from the 1st through the 8th, you couldn't keep up. Then from the 20th through the 30th, you're laying people off. So now
okay.
they have done a lot better in sending the checks out in a more even flow. So your business, you can budget and forecast pretty much from month to month with this new food stamp increase and checks and stimulus. I mean, it's been a good for the stores.
How many items do you have in the store?
Oh man, maybe 3,000.
Man, how do you keep up with the inventory on that?
Well, you have.
I don't know the grocery business at all, so.
Hit 3,000, but you probably got 500 items that you move constantly, that
mm-hmm.
you have to have a variety. That's meat and everything, though.
Okay, well, yeah, people like all different kinds of food, including water, different beverages, different rices, different types of pasta. Your seafood department, meat department. There's a lot there. So, do you guys have a bakery?
No, the bakeries are pretty much obsolete now in the grocery store because your supply have the heat and serve, the thaw and serve program where they send it to you and it's good for 7-8 days and it's already baked and you don't have to labor the bacon in and you just put it out and it's a good product.
All right, so no bakery. Now, what do you think about these, I don't know if you call them high-end grocery stores, or knocking at the door, like a place like Whole Foods. What's that? How is that classified?
No, that's another category of groceries, actually. It leans toward the more health-conscious eating people, if I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to find a Whole Food in a food desert, I'll tell you that much.
No, you're not.
But, you know, you can carry some of the main products, you know, the turkey products, the healthier stuff. You can have that inside a store in a food desert, but they're not going to bring a Whole Foods to the...
Let me ask you this, okay. Now, you got people, some people that they might shop at a Dollar General or some place like that. A can of Spam. Okay. I guess the primary distinction is the price. Would you buy it at Dollar General? I don't know if Whole Foods even sells that, but let's say they do. And then your store, why is there a price distinction on a product like that?
Well, and go back to volume. I mean, like I said, your volume helps you. You make less margin, or you make more margin, or you leave it down. But you can't compare a grocery store to a dollar store pricing, so that's what they. But there's some items in the grocery store, in the dollar store that's higher than the grocery store, but basically the buying power won't allow you to lower your margins down to what a dollar store can pay for it. Mm-hmm. I have an appointment in like 5 minutes, so guys, I just wanted to know if we were about to ramp it up.
If anybody's got any questions to ask, because we had other callers here listening. Press 1 or call 619-768-2945. But let me ask you this, so I don't want to make you late for your appointment. What are the future plans for your – well, no, a better question. For people that are interested in getting into the grocery business, how can they reach you, particularly if they're in St. Louis?
Okay, I'll give you my cell phone number directly. It's 314-307-9135. And I'll give you the store number. It's 5770.
Okay. And the name of the store, if people in St. Louis area, they need to go in and buy some food. Where can they go? Address, name the store.
Okay, the address of the store is 1001 North 15th Street. And that's East San Luis, Illinois, 62205.
Okay, great. Well, we wish you continued success, and we're going to ask you back again soon.
Can I say one more thing?
Ahead.
Let me give you that number again. It's 618-857-8330. Sorry, I gave you the wrong number. But if anyone's interested in investors and questions, give me a call and we can definitely sit down, set a meeting up, and kind of hash out if there's some interest.
All right. Well, thank you for your time. I know you got to run. And we'll be calling you back so we can bring you in again.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, and thank you, Pianki, for that as well. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
How'd it go?
We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know.
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
Yo, B.I., man, I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man, you know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right, relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday, you know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised with you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know.
Hold on. It's on me. I had that kid in my sights. Close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
Alright. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're going to put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you going to do?
I don't know, but it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
Man in his time, you know?
Yeah. He a man today. He a man.
Okay, we're going to have Sterling back hopefully next month. I was binge-watching Ozarks last night and what do you call the other show? Snowfall. So the Sandman is kicking my butt right now. So I'm going to end it today, because I don't want to be nodding off or whatever. So in any event, we'll be back tomorrow. Everyone, have a good rest of the day.